Hello and welcome to Islanders Anxiety, the podcast from Lighthouse Hockey. My name is Dan Saracini. Joining me via Skype is my friend Mike Alibov. And Mike, on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you that the preseason is over?
I'm happy. I'm like an 8. Yeah. I'm not happy to be sweating these games now, but I am very, 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 very happy to the preseason, you know, lines and freaking out about different defense pairs is over. Yeah. And now it really counts.
It actually does matter now. So yeah, as the man who hates the preseason the most, I thought that would be higher, but yeah, now means that we actually have to worry about this stuff.
It should be. In theory, it should be, but the only thing I hate more than the preseason is the regular season.
Fair enough. On a scale of 1 to 10, I am at a 10, super excited, because we have our first special guest of the season, perhaps our most special guest. He is our friend and Lighthouse Hockey's founder, Dominik Yansky. Dom, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
No problem. Now that we're doing this weekly, I hope to actually follow up on the promise I always make to do this more than once a year. So getting this off on a good start.
Yeah, very good.
So we got a lot to talk about. The Islanders play tomorrow night. We're recording this on Wednesday. The Islanders play their opening game in Raleigh on Thursday against the Hurricanes, who for the 18th season in a row are picked to be the surprise team out of the Eastern Conference. We'll see how that works out. But they have done a bunch of stuff already this week. They've pared down – every team in the NHL has pared down to their final roster of 23 players. For the Islanders, that meant sending Devon Toews to Bridgeport, which we'll talk about a lot in a little bit, and also waiving Tanner Fritz and Tom Kuhnhackle, although they're kind of still hanging around, which is kind of weird, all in the name of roster flexibility. But basically, and this is an Arthur Staple tweet, obviously Arthur would be the first person to say that he's always wrong about these things, but the lineup generally kind of is looking sort of like a top line of Barzal between Beauvillier and Bailey. So a little Killer Bees action going on there. Nelson, Lee, and Eberle in the second line, as in the sort of other guys that are capable of scoring. Martin Cizikas, Clutterbuck get a promotion from the best fourth line ever to, as our friend Noel has already called them, the most meh third line ever. And then the Komarov, Filppula line is fourth. Maybe Tanner Fritz goes there. Maybe Kuhnhackle. Maybe big man Ross Johnston. Maybe Andrew Ladd when he comes back healthy eventually. And then the defense is all over the place. Apparently Adam Pellick and Ryan Pulick are their first pair. Again, Arthur Staple is speculating. Lucas Pisa, Nick Leddy. Boy, we got a lot to talk about Lucas Pisa later. And then Thomas Hickey and Johnny Boychuk. And then Leonard and Grice as the goalies. So, Dom, we'll start with you. I think we're all in agreement that this is not a lineup that inspires a lot of confidence. But I guess my first question would be sort of, what were your takeaways from the camp? And kind of what are your, I guess, initial thoughts about this lineup, although again, places are subject to change.
Yeah, I feel like it's I want to give Barry Trotz a long leash, and it's going to be interesting to watch him sort of figure it out. Like I don't like the decisions they made with especially demoting Devon Toews, but it was so almost predictable that stuff like that was going to happen that it's almost like that they kept Tanner Fritz was like, oh, wow, you might sort of keep a guy who's quote unproven, not from a winning culture and all that crap. Because you're like, oh, he can actually like skate and might move, I mean, what he'll do saddled on that line, I don't know. But maybe he'll be like one of the first casualties of like, yeah, it's not working out for him because he's never getting the puck because he's playing with two other weights,
two old guys. Yeah.
I assume they're just gonna shout at him like, "Win, yeah. Culture." But yeah. I don't know. I think whereas in the past I was less confident in what the coaches were doing, I at least feel like Trotz will eventually, make more decisions. The D pairings actually are that's fascinating to me. Like what he's thinking and what he's going to discover. And I don't know, Staple made like a couple references to how basically the juggling has been, because he's not satisfied with how any of them are picking up what he wants to do. So while I'm terrified of the season, I'm excited to see just like how he handles all of that. You know, whether he storms upstairs at some point, says, "Okay, Lou, we actually need somebody else."
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Mike, you and I talked last time about how the Islanders, as a whole, are kind of like a box of misfit toys. Like you're trying to create one. Barry Trotz, I guess, is trying to create one cohesive playset from all of these different toys from all these different series, and some of them aren't the same size, and some of them don't, you know, fit right together. And I mean, looking at a lineup like this, that's still pretty evident. My favorite aspect of this is Nick Leddy playing on a side he hasn't played on since his rookie year in Chicago to accommodate Lucas Pisa, a guy who wasn't wanted by the expansion team that picked him up in the expansion draft a year ago. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of any of this. I mean, what are you looking at this lineup and thinking as of like?
Yeah,
right
now? It's so funny because you look at it, and if you brought somebody in who had no idea, you know, what the Islanders had done this offseason, and you just slowly revealed the lines from the top to the bottom, you'd be like, oh, first line, that's pretty good. Second line, all right. And then that's just off a cliff.
Yeah.
Like no other team. Like I don't know if I've ever seen a team that is so not just top heavy, but there's like literally no like middle to it.
Right.
At all. It's really, really good and really, really bad. So, I don't know. It should be a study. This roster construction should be a study in like 10 years when they're teaching hockey analytics. When Kyle Dubas is the professor at like McGill University teaching hockey analytics.
With the 8-time Stanley Cup champion, Kyle Dubas. Yeah. And actually it's funny you mentioned that. Cause I was thinking about, I was listening to our last week's podcast, trying to refresh my memory about what we said. And we talked about Tom Kuhnhackl and how he has a fun name to say. But it occurred to me that like, so he's been waived, but he's still with the team and you can do that. And apparently the idea is that when Andrew Ladd comes back from injury, which is a story we've heard now for 2 straight seasons, you know, they'll be able to just go, okay, Tom, bye-bye. Cause you've already been waived and they don't have to like put him on waivers again, which is kind of a cagey move, but also kind of complicated and weird. Cause I mean, Kuhnhackl has been waived, but he could also be in the lineup tomorrow night. We don't know, but he's the kind of guy who was brought in because of the culture, and we're going to talk all about that in a little bit. But like, and he might be an okay player. I don't even know. Like, I don't even remember seeing him play at all. None of what he did during the preseason kind of stuck out to me. But it occurred to me that on a team with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and all the rest, you can play a Tom Kuhnhackl, and if he's not that good, well, who cares? Like, you're going to roll Sidney Crosby out there every minute or so, and then after him is going to come Malkin, and it's not a big – Phil Kessel and the whole lot of them. But, like, on the Islanders, yeah, that's a problem. Like, if Tom Kuhnhackl's not good, and maybe he's paired up with Komarov and Filppula, that's really not good. And suddenly, you know, this team is going to get derailed in a hurry, and I don't know, maybe we're wrong, but it's not looking good right now, and I don't know, like, you know – they're playing a Hurricanes team that has given them trouble forever. I mean, what do you think, Dom? Like, do you think that there's going to be some kind of like, I mean, Staple alluded to maybe some kind of, you know, line matching, but the playing time is going to be very, very regimented being doled out because you can't have guys lines like those bottom two lines out there for too long. You're going to get killed.
Yeah. That's what I've been wondering is like, is he just going to, you know, play the top two lines into the ground? I mean, I'm sure the Cizikas line will get their regular shift no matter what, you know, maybe even the symbolic period starters and goal followers in honor of Jack Capuano or something. But yeah, I just don't, I mean, other teams are going to look at that, especially like, I don't know, we haven't really referenced too, like, we don't know if Brock Nelson is going to be able to do this, you know, he's, yeah. I mean, yeah. So like it could really fall to pieces pretty quickly if he's not an effective center, or if he's, you know, maybe they find some chemistry with that new mix there, or maybe Trotz teaches him things that nobody has, you know, been instilling or you know, disciplining him to do over the last several seasons.
Right.
But I mean, you know, he has skill and talent and stuff, but it's just the kind of disappearing and yeah, so I'm just, I don't know how many, it's kind of, how many minutes can you give the top line?
Yeah,
and then just, you know, I'm trying to be optimistic and open-minded, but I just see things, you know, falling apart fairly quickly.
I have the staple tweet I've been referencing up on here, and I'm staring at it while listening to you guys talk, and I'm just shaking my head like, man, this is going to get really bad. This is and you know, even with the deep pairings that you were saying, like, it's possible it's probable that Trotz is, yeah, experimenting because he's not sure what to do. And again, those top two lines have been fairly cemented, and I think they're okay. But, you know, again, Nelson's a question mark. But, I mean, everybody else is kind of where they should be, I guess. Although the Josh Bailey arguments will continue until we're all dead and buried hundreds of years from now. But, you know, that being said, if he is still experimenting and the season starts tomorrow, it's probably not a good sign. And I mean, yeah, I mean, Mike, the whole thing last time was that maybe, you know, we need to look into the future for our optimism and be like, well, you know, year one is probably going to suck, but maybe year two and year three. But I mean, even still, as a year one group, this might be, I don't know, just it's hard to really kind of get excited when, you know, you have guys on this team that you like, but at the same time, they're not playing with each other, and that makes it really, really hard to kind of get excited, right?
Yeah, yeah, it does. And I hope that, you know, if it does go off the rails, that they do make, you know, Lou and Trotz look at themselves in the mirror, which is, you know, a lot easier said than done, just given the way those two guys are, and do make the right moves and bring up, you know, the Taves and the Bellows and the Hosangs, because if the thing is, like, if the Islanders hadn't gone out and went bargain bin like crazy in the offseason, they would be like, they wouldn't be a playoff team, but, you know, there'd be a lot more reason to be looking forward to tomorrow and the season with Hosang and Bellows playing up with you know, with Barzal and Beauvillier and not, you know, Valtteri Filppula, you know, handsome as he is, yeah, which we will give him his due for absolutely being handsome, which you did like every episode, yeah. I think. And but you know, that there'd be a lot more reason. The ceiling would be higher, and you know, there'd be a reason to tune in. Like, it's just, it's unfortunate that, you know, it kind of went that route instead of you know, the taking a risk in a season that was basically already lost on July 1st. So,
yeah, I mean, they wouldn't say that it was lost on July 1st, but I mean, I don't know. It's kind of hard to not. I mean, it's funny because now all the stories are coming out. Like, oh, people are writing us off. We got a chip on our shoulder. We're using that as motivation. That's all fine and good, and I get all that. But like, I don't know, if you're looking at this roster, it's pretty tough to do that. But I was just reminded of two things that were pointed out to me as you were mentioning Fritz and Hosang and Kiefer Bellows. I mean, so let's assume that tomorrow night's lineup involves a line of Komarov, Filppula, and Kuhnhackl, let's just say. Like, how much better would the Islander, and then Martin, Cizikas, Clutterbuck is, I mean, I don't want to go too much into numbers because I don't think any coach really goes with that, but what if, like, how much better would the team be if Komarov and Filppula and Kuhnhackl weren't involved and the line was, say, Fritz, Hosang, and Bellows? Like, that's a line that can skate, that's young, that can score. And, yeah, I mean, okay, all of those guys are, you know, Fritz is 27, but he's got, like, you know, a dozen games of NHL experience. So they're kind of a young line. That, to me, would be an exciting line. And, I mean, Tanner Fritz is not a superstar, but, like, that would be an exciting line to me. And that would be a line that I would think, if I was a coach, which, of course, I am not, like, this is a line that can do stuff and can make stuff happen. But instead, we're going with the sort of, like you just said, Dom, expected way of having Komarov, Filppula, and Fritz, which is really disappointing. The second thing is, these guys, they're bargain bin signings, but they're also expensive. And, like, the Islanders had, like, $20 million of cap space, and now they have half of that, which is also disappointing because they could have used some of that for other pickups later. But yeah, I don't know. And then, yeah, the less said about Lucas Spezza, the better. So let's just talk about Devon Taves, the guy who got sent down to Bridgeport. Again, this was all done in the name of flexibility. If I had Lou's quote up, I would read it in my Lou Lamoriello impression that it was all about having roster flexibility and giving the coach a chance to, you know, move stuff around. And that's all fine and good, but, like, how long is Devon Taves going to be down there? And how long are we going to have to watch Lucas Visa fall down on the ice before being like, dude, what the hell? We just went through this with Ryan Pulock. Like, we got to do this again. I don't know. Why are they so averse to young guys? Does anybody have an answer? I don't think we do, but I don't know.
Anybody, I don't think anybody guess? In the NHL does.
Yeah.
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 Because, you know, this stuff does, like, we always do say that, like, you know, this stuff, it's, I don't know if it happens this drastically in other markets, but every team has this problem.
Right. For sure. Yeah.
Definitely. I don't know if every team's Twitter faction gets all, you know, fiery when that happens, but no, that's true. Everybody does do this, but it doesn't make it any more fun or, you know,
no, definitely not. I do want to say, like, I am the one thing that I am happy about is that they keep saying that they want these guys to be playing regularly, which is, I'm like, you know, I feel like the last regime, that was never the case. When they sent somebody down, like I was saying, it was because, you know, he isn't there yet. So they send him down and then he plays on the third line or he gets benched by Brent Thompson. Whereas this time they're like, no, we're going to make sure these guys play together on the top line. Like even Kovac, they're like, you know, who another unfortunate kind of demotion. He's going to play on the top line, hopefully with good players, and we'll see him. Hopefully we'll see him soon before he gets jettisoned back to the KHL.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, the Islanders are the original. Like, getting guys playing time has not been a priority for the Islanders. Case in point, JF Berube. Case in point, Matt Donovan. Guys that sat forever to not play, and like, oh yeah, well they're practicing hard, so that's good. Yeah, come on, give me a break. Dom, were you going to say something? Sorry, I just need to get that in there.
I was just saying, you know, I am excited about Bridgeport this year. That's
isn't that weird? Like, I read Michael Fornabio, and if you're listening to us and not following Michael Fornabio at the CT Connecticut Post, you're doing it wrong. That guy is great. He is as good at his league as Arthur Staple and Andrew Gross are at theirs. And he actually sounds very excited about this team because they have veterans for a change and like scoring and good players. And like Chris Bourque is a guy who, you know, you're like, oh, that guy didn't retire yet. He's like an AHL superstar. And he's like a legend. Who knew, right? And he's got 3 Calder Cups and 2 scoring titles and, I don't know, an MVP or something like that. And he signed with Bridgeport because his brother is here. But, I mean, he makes them, like, one of the favorites for the Calder Cup, which is something I can never remember the Bridgeport Sound Tigers ever being.
No. Yeah, so. Never. And I do like, you know, they would never say that, but if they want some of these guys we're talking about to get playing time in a, you know, on a good, functioning, winning team.
Yeah.
You know, rather than suffer through the misery where it's like, oh, we could send Phil Bill out there, you know, we're paying him enough to suffer through a terrible season. Like, you know, expansion team level. You know, I guess they always say there's some benefit to, you know, players growing up together and having some success at the minor league level. Yeah. So I'll kind of look on the bright side there.
I feel like if, you know, 8 months from now, the Islanders have missed the playoffs, but the Sound Tigers have won the Calder Cup with a lot of these guys, then I'll be like, you know what? Maybe those guys were right. And it worked out pretty well. And I know a lot of people listening to this are like, oh, who the hell cares? It's an Islanders team. You know, they got – who cares about – like, it does have some value. And, I mean, I know when the Devils were doing their thing, the Albany River Rats / Devils were always good. I mean, they always were in the mix for the Calder Cup. So, I mean, that's a sign of a healthy franchise when that happens. I mean, it would be a small solace, I think, for all of us. but it would be something. You know, we've talked a lot about these older guys and how they, you know, how they appeared on the team. And so the question is like, well, if you've got guys like Kiefer Bellows and Devon Taves, we'll leave Josh Hosang out of the conversation for a little bit right now. And we can say that they're better. They're certainly younger, and maybe they're probably better than a lot of these older guys that were signed for this summer. Why the hell aren't they playing? And somebody asked that question to Andrew Gross, and this was his answer, and I thought it was very interesting. You know, it's not a direct quote, but this is what he wrote. Somebody wrote, why is Sabiza on the roster? And basically, Gross wrote, the answer that comes back on Sabiza, on Komarov, on Filppula, is the organization, in looking to change / improve the culture, wanted to bring in good character guys who have been in winning programs. Management valuing that higher. Not debating the merits, just passing along the rationale. don't shoot the messenger. They like these guys because they play around with winners, which is fair enough.
Yes, Beast has been on a lot of winners.
Yeah. It's like, whatever.
I guess he played with the Anaheim. He played with Anaheim, who used to be winners and you know, act like they're winners without having actually won anything. The Canucks have been terrible, and obviously the Vegas Golden Knights have a winning tradition unlike any other in the NHL. But so I have decided to start calling Komarov, Filppula, Sabiza, and Matt Martin, who again is a holdover, but he's come back over for the same reason. I've decided to dub them the Islanders Culture Club. They are the Culture Club, and they have been brought in to change the culture. And this is probably nonsense. Like, I don't know. Like, what are you thinking? What are your thoughts on the idea of changing a culture by just bringing in other guys? It doesn't seem like it's going to make a lot of – it's going to actually, you know, work. But this is what guys do, I guess, what coaches and GMs do.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem with that statement is when you say guys instead of guy. Like, like if you brought in Patrick Marleau or somebody like, you know, I hate James Neal, and I think he's a, you know, dirty player. But like, you know, if you brought like someone like that and David Perron on a deal, who's someone who's been and seen and can kind of do that, that's fine. Mm-hmm. I don't think the Islanders needed eight of them. Right. And I don't think, you know, like the Kunackle one is the one that of all of them like stuck out, because I was like, we just signed Thomas Kunackle like 3 times already this offseason. I don't know what the point was there. And, you know, like we always say, like these guys obviously have forgotten more about hockey and roster construction than we can ever imagine to obtain. But it is really not a good sign when everybody was like, what on earth are the Islanders doing?
Yeah.
And then at one point someone was like, I'm pretty sure the Islanders just have a type. And I was like, that's right? The perfect way to do it.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, it was like every morning you woke up and there was another signing of the same guy. I don't know. I feel like this is where, you know, maybe I blame Lou, like, who I think he's past his prime in terms of hockey eval, but he, you know, he did have the 2012 finals team, but captained by Bryce Salvador, featuring Eric Bolton, Cam Jansen.
That is one of the most important teams in Islanders history too, by the way. Yeah. That team for what they did in the conference finals. Like Adam Henrique, like I would have no problem if the Islanders raise Adam Henrique's number to the rafters.
Yeah.
And Alec Martinez.
They did us a huge favor.
Right, exactly. Martinez. Yeah, I was in I had firm confidence that no matter what, the Kings would save us. that's true. But I just don't like, I don't, it doesn't make sense. Like Kunackle played fourth line minutes on a cup winning team. Komarov came from Toronto, which has sucked.
Yeah.
Like Martin went from the Islanders to Toronto, which both sucked.
Yeah.
Spisa has played on so many sucky teams, but he happened to be healthy for half the season for a team that went on a Cinderella win. So I just don't even know what a winning culture, I don't know, find a different term for it, because guys who showed up to meetings on time or something, or you know, don't piss and moan when I lower their number, or I don't know. Like, I feel like there's certainly value to the collective and to the team culture and stuff, but it just seems like it is so overly valued here. I have, of course, all the best hopes for Lamorello working out, but you know, each signing has been like, this is kind of, because even people are like, oh, well, you know, he was part of Toronto's turnaround. And it's like, well, but was he? I mean, how much did he inherit there? And even while that was happening, because Kyle Dubas was there before him, people are like, which decisions of these are Dubas and which are Lamorello's? Because you could kind of see the type. And now that they've split up, it's like, yeah, okay. He was the guy who, you know, signed Matt Martin, God love him, for 4 years.
Yeah.
And Dubas was the guy, you know, nurturing uncovered talent,
right,
and stuff. So I'm worried. I'm very worried.
No, I think we all are. And my whole thing with all this culture stuff is I feel like they're doing it backwards. Like, you can't bring in a guy and be like, you're the culture guys. You need to set up our mm-hmm. culture. But it's like, they've never been in this locker room before. Maybe they all know each other. I mean, the league is different than when, you know, Dennis Potvin was trying to like kill guys. Like they literally hated the Rangers, you know, and John Davidson admitted he literally hated the Islanders because it was, you know, awful back then. And before then, like, you know, when Ted Lindsay got traded from Detroit to Chicago, like, you know, that was like a slap in the face. You might as well send him to death row. Like that was, you know, that you couldn't, you didn't do that to somebody, but you know, it just feels like you're trying to airdrop these guys into a situation they've never been in before. And if you really want to build a winning culture, you almost start with, you know, like we just talked about, like having guys on a team, you know, on a, maybe a winning AHL team. And maybe that's where the culture starts. And then they bring that culture and that drive and that motivation and that camaraderie up to the NHL level. I mean, like I wasn't kidding with the Devils, like their AHL team was really good and they, you know, graduated guys to the NHL all the time that continued to be really good. And like that was the culture was installed. Nobody like dropped a bunch of dudes in and just said, "You're the culture now. Go for it." So that's my thing. It's like I get you want to change the culture. We all want the Islanders to change their culture. We want them to stop sucking. But like I don't think you do that by just, you know, installing some new software and all of a sudden calling it a new culture. It doesn't work that way.
You know what's funny is the Islanders already got the culture guys. One is wearing a suit on the bench and the other one's wearing a suit in the skybox.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much, yeah. Aren't those the guys instilling the culture?
Yeah, they already did it. Like, so whatever. It is what it is at this point. So
yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, and the other thing too is that like that I mean, that's 100% true. Like they Lamoriello and Trotz I agree with you, Dom. Like I feel like Lou's best years are definitely behind him. Trotz obviously is, I think, if coaching has a prime, Barry Trotz is still in it, you know, which is, and he's been in it for a long time. So I have a lot of faith in Trotz, and even with these weird lineup decisions, even if they are sort of extending the evaluation period, I'm okay with that. Like I'm okay with Trotz. I give him a much longer leash than I gave Capuano or Doug Waite. But, you know, these guys are kind of like, again, being airdropped in, and they are legends that are coming from different places. You know, Lamoriello from Toronto, but obviously he's a Devil's legend. Like that's where he made his history, and people are always going to remember him. When he dies, that his tombstone is going to have a New Jersey Devils logo on it. Like that's how it works. Trotz, he won the Capitals their first Stanley Cup, and obviously you know the Nashville Predators wouldn't be where they are without him being there for 15 years. But Dom, you and I were talking, and you brought up something that I never realized before. It's like when you're the legend and you come in as the legend and people, you know, sort of introduce you as this is our legendary GM, Mr. X, who was a legend for another team that wasn't ours, it never really goes that well. Like it never works out for the new team nearly as well as it worked out for the legend's first team. And I never thought of it that way.
Yeah. Yeah, that's where. Well, that I brought that up because it Mike last week his Brendan Shanahan rant was hilarious, and it gave me flashbacks to how like Lou Lamoriello's kind of haunted my hockey existence for about three decades now because I mean I you know the Devils were terrible in the 80s. I actually like was happy when they made the playoffs on the last day, you know, because I was like, yeah, this is, you know, Gretzky called them a Mickey Mouse organization, you know, screw him. But yeah, they finally did it. You know, they were the Rockies and the Scouts before, like they came from such crap and he was leading them. But of course, then they knocked the Isles out in the first round. So I didn't like that. But so I'm from St. Louis. I rooted for the Islanders and the Blues. And Lamoriello is like the made man in the league. He gets every benefit of the doubt. Like the other GMs and teams, you know, talk about it. They're like whispering, you know, this summer when he was apparently allowed to talk to Tavares before he was an actual Islanders employee. Yeah. It's like the Blues signed, you know, Scott Stevens is a free agent. The league hated it. You know, so the next year they signed Shanahan as a free agent and Lamoriello is able to, get Stevens is compensation, which is just amazing. Like, I mean, how history would have changed if that didn't happen. I mean, how even Lamoriello's legend would be different. But like, the Devils even won like additional draft picks from the Blues like throughout the decade for tampering charges because like Stevens's agent would reach out, you know, about, you know, him coming back to the team the next time he hit. Like they even levied one fine after the agent was already dead. You know, just like I just feel like. So here we have this guy. He's a made guy in the league. Like he gets every benefit of the doubt. And now we've gotten him when I think they're ready to like have him sleep with the fish. He's not gonna get the benefit of the doubt anymore. They're like, oh, okay, yeah, you can go ahead and go to the Islanders now. That we're cool with that. Like that'll be your retirement home.
Right.
But I just, yeah. You know, because I just feel like this is par for the course for me. I mean, on the blue side, they had Scotty Bowman as coach before he went on and won like 5 consecutive cups or something. They had Al Arbor as coach before he went on and won 19 consecutive playoff series. They had Joel Quenneville before he went on and won cups with their main rival.
That's a great one.
The feeder club.
Yeah, totally. And so it's either that or like they got, you know, Gretzky for 19 games or something. Oh yeah, Keenan.
Yeah, I was gonna say Mike Keenan. Yeah.
Yeah. After he won the, you know, after all of his methods were so clearly unsound for the '90s NHL, you know, like he needed every possible ex-Oiler in the arsenal to win one blip, and then that was it. And then they like gave him all the power in St. Louis, and of course he just scorched everything. Brett Hull's gone, Shanahan's gone, Gretzky's there for 2 weeks before he turns around and leaves. So. I just my history and a lot of it overlaps with Lamoriello, makes me think like, yeah, finally we got that guy, except the way the league is now, I don't think he's that guy anymore. So I'm going to have to deal with it.
I think he'll get the benefit of a lot of things. I've always thought that, I mean, once I found out that Gary Bettman kind of grew up going to games at Nassau Coliseum, I was always like, you know what? I think Gary's got the Islanders back. I think there's a reason why they're still here after all of that, like, you know, relocation drama and stuff. And I mean, he could have just told them, like, we got to sell this team and move them someplace else. But they're still here. I think he likes having them here. And nobody wants to admit that. Nobody likes Gary Bettman. But I don't know. I kind of like that. I think Bettman's got their back. But, yeah, I mean, there's something to that of having, you know, the past legend. And, I mean – you know, guys like, I mean, we had Ted Nolan, the Islanders had Ted Nolan after he was, you know, his run, and Peter Laviolette before his run. So, I mean, Mike, I'm sure you can come up with a whole bunch of other guys that were all like, you know, here before or after their legendary time. Yeah. But
I really loved Ted Nolan. I think I called the Islanders to like ticket office when they fired him. So, yeah, I was like, I know this isn't your fault, but I really liked him. But I like, but that was, the lady was really nice. Yeah. But I mean, that's like the kind of, you know, what the good thing of like the great part about those hires is that like, you're like, oh, you know, maybe they can recapture the magic. They rarely do. I mean, the Ted Nolan years were fun. And I think that he kind of did bring like a little bit of a culture change, but he did it by not being a player, by being a coach. Right. So that's usually where it comes from.
I've never thought that a coach matched a team better than Ted Nolan coaching the Islanders, because it was the guy who was blacklisted versus the, you know, coaching the team that has literally been blacklisted by everybody forever. So I thought that really worked. And then I liked when Jack Capuano first started, and who was the Rangers coach at the time? Like, it was all very kind of like
Tom Rennie or something.
It might have been Tom Rennie. It was Vigneault. It was Alain Vigneault and Capuano. And then who coached the Devils before? Oh, and then Pete DeBoer, right? So DeBoer, I forget if it was at that point, but it just seemed like every area team had their like perfect match. Like, you know, Vigneault was always put together. You know, he's like the mastermind. Like, he's always got all this stuff. You know, he's a big analytics guy. He's all got this stuff laid out. And then like DeBoer is sort of like the nondescript hockey guy. He looks a little like, you know, the lost Bill Murray brother, but he's, you know, he knows his stuff, and he's just out there doing his thing quietly, efficiently. And then you got Jack Capuano, who looks like he literally rolled in off the street, you know, coaching a team of long hairs that have no business being on the same ice, but they had a lot of energy, you know, so I thought that all kind of worked out pretty well. Let me change the subject very quickly. That was all very intense. And Dom, I appreciate the rant.
I apologize.
No.
There's a lot of baggage here.
No, that's good. No, that's a lifetime of baggage. This whole show is about baggage. That's the reason we do this. So here's a baggage-laden topic, too. So the other thing the Islanders did this week was they announced their third jersey. Now, as I wrote, normally an Islanders third jersey is, you know, the worst news of the year includes the Islanders announcing a third jersey. This third jersey, I'm happy to say, is not a total disaster. but it doesn't mean it's good either. It's just sort of there. It's fine. Honestly, I think it's fine. Like, they're going to wear it for a couple of years, get another one. I don't really care. But Mike, you said you had some feelings on it, or maybe your non feelings on it are your feelings on it, and it's kind of indicative of like where the team is at right now, almost.
Yeah, it's like the goal song conversation we had last year. Like, the jersey's fine. Like, it's not like it's not ugly or anything, but it's just it's like very safe. And I think that's what the Islanders' PR strategy has been for I don't know, like my entire adult life, because they were for the first part of my first half of my life, the Islanders were just made fun of for every decision they made, like from the fisherman jersey to everything, you know, player sumo wrestlers as goalies, whatever. So now the PR strategy is, you know, make sure that, you know, we participate in these cool things like third jerseys, but we just make sure that they won't get us bad press. Right. Whereas like, and then in a parallel to this is what the Flyers did with their mascot, where they, you know, they got this wonderful thing, and like 9 times out of 10, that decision by the Flyers comes back to hurt them, and everyone makes fun of it. But for some reason, just in the moment, it worked, and everybody loves it. Like, that's what I was kind of hoping for in you know, in from game ops and stuff, especially now that it's kind of, you know, a new era kind of deal.
Yeah.
Like I you know, whether people wanted the fisherman logo, some people hate it, some people don't, you know, but taking a chance, like, that would have been fun. It would have given the team like a little bit more of a like identity, but like something that we could kind of hold on to. And I wish I just wish that them from like a PR standpoint would take, you know, more chances and be quirkier. Yeah. 'Cause that's what the Islanders are. The Islanders are a weird, weird thing.
Yeah.
And
they seem to be kind of gun shy with stuff like that. Like, they kind of want to be out there, but I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm kind of glad they don't have one of these sort of sentient, self-referential or whatever, self-aware Twitter feeds like the Kings or Blue Jackets that I have absolutely blocked from all Twitter accounts because I can't take them anymore. I'm glad they're not like that. But yeah, I'm with you. Like, I feel like they could embrace themselves being kind of out there. I mean, they're suburban. Them and the Ducks are really the only two suburban teams left in the NHL, and that would be something to do. And I mean, they do a lot of Long Islandy stuff, and maybe that'll change when they move to Belmont. Maybe they'll work some like horse theme stuff into there. You don't know. But yeah, the new jersey is sort of bland, and I don't know. I kind of thought about it for a couple of days, and I know people are going to hate this, but if I was going to do a third, the thing about third jerseys is it's got to call. I forget, somebody else said this too, and I think it might have been Dan and Noel on their podcast. Like, it's got to mean something to somebody, and it's got to like either call back to an old jersey or kind of like maybe set the tone for the future, maybe. But I think generally speaking, people like the look of going back to the old jerseys. And I think for the Islanders, that means one of two things. Either you go back to 1972-73 style, the lace-ups, no names, orange numbers, or you do the fisherman. Like, that's it. And I think if they did the fisherman, I think more people would like it than not. You'd be a lot of guys going, ah, this sucks, I hated this one, it was out. I get that. But like, that's a jersey that like people have emotional ties to it, like Mike, you were saying. They either hate it or they love it. But it's something that people can say, yes, that is something I want to do. I mean, they're wearing Whalers jersey now in Carolina. How many people hate that? You know, probably a lot. So, but it's a jersey that people have an emotional attachment to. And I probably would have seen something like that. But at the end of the day, if it's fine and bland, I'd rather take that than something that, you know, is going to get people yelling at each other for 6 years or whatever.
Yeah. I found it odd, like the players describing it. Like, it seems like all the things they like are details that are probably look really cool when you're like holding in your hand, but right, that you would never be able to notice, like even in a HD TV interview between periods, like
it's a Long Island sewn into the inside of the collar. Like,
okay, right. Sure. Yeah. And there's like, oh, I retweeted one because they said like, there's an, what do they call it? A new striping
refined striping system.
Or some refined, yeah, striping system, which I just love. I'm just going to use that often if I can actually remember it. But no, I wondered if it almost gave me the impression like, and because they didn't release a schedule of when they're going to wear it, did they? And
no, I
kind
so.
Of wonder.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm wondering if it's like, they're like, well, Lou, no, we already signed out. Like, we have to have a third jersey. Well, if you are, this is what it, you know, it has to look as completely bland and not different, yeah, from the regular look as possible. And oh yeah, we're only going to wear it 2 games. Like, I mean, I wonder, yeah, if how often they're actually going to break it out. Because wasn't he really reluctant to use the Devils, the green yeah. throwback? Like, yeah. they wouldn't do that. And that's just a crime, you know, to be like, no, we're not. It's like, come on, you were there when you guys wore that. That was when you first made the playoffs.
That's like, what I'm talking about. Like, that's what people want because there's an emotional connection.
Yeah.
It's funny too, because like to me the jersey is very similar to the Yankee Stadium jersey that they wore. Right. Like that's the one it reminds me of the most. It, to me, that's like I couldn't even tell you. I remember being cold at that game, and I'm pretty sure Brock Nelson scored.
Yeah.
So it's basically the Brock Nelson of third jerseys. Like.
Right.
Oh, there's our title right there.
Yes.
Oh, that's awesome. Thank you. I think that's probably the most accurate description of the jersey that I have heard this entire time. They have does it say here? Oh yeah, this is from the Islanders webpage. Subtle nods to the team heritage with a color palette, refined striping system, and orange numbering reminiscent of the team's inaugural 1972-73 blue sweater. So yeah, I mean, I was actually – it's funny you mentioned that, Dom, too, with Lou, is because, you know, it took a while for them to announce this. Like, other teams had kind of announced it during the summer when there's nothing else going on. It's something to do. And I started to wonder, wouldn't it be cool if, like, Luke – I don't know if cool is the right word, but wouldn't it be funny if Lou, like, showed up and immediately said – all right, and they brought it to him and it's like, okay, we're doing the third jersey. And he'd be like, nope, we're not doing the third. No third jersey.
Yeah.
I'm out of there. We don't do third jerseys. My teams don't do third jerseys. Although even though the Leafs had one, and I was like, wow, that would be something. And then like we'd have a whole story about how we killed the jersey and people would be mad and it would be a whole big thing. And it would be, oh my God, it's another Islanders thing. But actually it would be kind of funny. And then when I saw the jersey, I was like, oh, it's really not worth killing. Like it's just sort of there. Yeah. And you know, he probably was like, oh, I don't care. Whatever.
But it needs more nods to heritage. Like there should be like jail bars for the Gang of Four, like reference somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Like,
lighthouses.
Some waves.
Yeah.
The wave.
Right. Yeah. Just make a big Franken jersey. That would be great.
Like, that would be nice.
One of everything on there. But anyway, again, buy it if you like it. Don't buy it if you don't. A couple of years from now, it'll go away. You know, people like the black. People complain, you know, non-Islander fans would always complain to me, oh, those black jerseys are terrible. And I'd be like, next time you watch a game, look in the stands. You see a lot of those black jerseys. People liked them. So, you know, you can never really tell. People like the orange. I'm sure, Mike, you love that orange jersey.
I really did.
I didn't like that.
That was one of my people like, you know, you think about a jersey, you try to think about the player that, you know, you equate to it. And for some reason, I just see it like half tucked into like Jason Blake's shorts or Sean Bates. I liked it. I really liked that jersey.
Yeah. You know, to me, the you know, the fisherman brings up some bad memories, but you know that'll always be Ziggy Palfy's jersey. And you know, I'm a fan of the sort of they did make some subtle changes. Actually, it's funny with the Islanders is they made little tiny changes for a lot of years throughout the 70s and 80s. And I mean, the LaFontaine era ones are like the logo is a little bit smaller and the numbers are a little bit different. But that to me, like LaFontaine Ferraro era, would be, you know, probably my favorites, but. I guess we should talk about the game that's actually going to happen tomorrow, the first game of the season. I think we all hope they win, but
the first thing you need to do is find somebody to take a Will Calvin DeHaan score prop bet and just say yes.
Absolutely.
Because he will. His first goal in like 3 years.
I mean,
yeah, it'll go through Spies' legs or something.
Yeah. Exactly.
I mean, I would bet money on a hat trick. I mean, doesn't every time the Islanders play the Hurricanes, doesn't a defenseman have a hat trick? I mean, it's pretty wild. I think that he's definitely going to score, but you know, we don't know who the goalie is, so maybe they'll get help. But I think the number one thing. I mean, I would be happy. I mean, obviously a win would be great, but I think if they play with structure, and that's another overused word that we should probably talk about at some point. Like, I think that would probably be a good sign. Like if they didn't, you know, give up six goals like the Bruins are right now. I don't know what the score of that game right now between the Bruins and Caps is. You know, I think that would be kind of a good sign. And I would be like, OK, let's see how this goes, because that's what I want to see from Trotz. I want to see them kind of, you know, play with structure. Dom, what about you? What would you like to see? And what do you think is going to happen? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, no, I agree. If you see Trotz's impact, you know, and see, it'll be, it'll be like the expansion teams with structure under Roger Nielsen or something. But I think that'd be a positive sign. And I think that's the best chance probably for Grice and Lehner, but especially Grice to have decent seasons is if, okay, that I don't have the most talented crew in front of me, but if they're at least predictable in how they handle play and approach assignments and coverage, you know, then they'll be a lot more competitive, less pond hockey, but it's, you know, they'll be in games, but without the talent to win them.
Yeah. Trott said something the other day, I forget where he said, you know, in order for our goalies to stop the pucks, they need to see them. So I guess that means he's not into shot blocking, which is good. We don't need that. Mike, besides the Calvin DeHaan goal and hat trick, what are you expecting to see tomorrow?
Probably the Islanders just get run around. And like you said, like, you know, if the Capitals under Trotz were all like, we're always outshot. It, you know, he stressed, I think he did an interview in the summer talking about quality of chances.
Yeah.
Like we're saying. And so I think, you know, we're going to see the Islanders. And I think this goes for basically every game that the Islanders are going to spend a lot of time in their own zone. Yeah. So, just get used to that. Get used to seeing that, and then.
But they'll be so much more competent and organized there.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. And the culture will be great in that zone. That's the thing. You have to really look at the culture in the zone. They'll be stuck in their zone for 2 minutes at a time, but the culture in that zone is going to be off the charts. It's going to be great.
So this will be a Rod Brind'Amour's debut too, right?
He's head coach. Yeah,
sure.
He's another guy. He's not quite as Shanahan-y as Shanahan in my mind, where like he ruined a lot of things. But I never liked Rod Brind'Amour as a player. Like, it pissed me off. Take your apostrophe and, you know, get the hell out of here. Yes.
I always like Rod Brind'Amour because he was like the first hockey player that was jacked. I mean, this guy spent more time in the weight room than he did on the ice, and he was always on like muscle magazines and stuff. And I mean, he was. And then, you know, Rick DiPietro did that too, and his hips just exploded every time he played. Right. It was really a shame, but Rod Brind'Amour didn't have that problem.
Yeah, Brind'Amour came up as a rookie in St. Louis, like for the playoffs, and like you got Brett Hull smoking cigarettes and eating donuts, like just they mocked him. They're like, "Oh, Rod the Bod's here," you know. Yeah. But I think he scored on his first two shots in the NHL.
That's pretty funny. as handsome as we agree that Valtteri Filppula is, I think. And no offense to Rod Brind'Amour, again, great player. Rod Brind'Amour, not a handsome man. That nose has seen some shit, man. That nose is it's been through the wars. Again, great player. I like the guy, but you know, we'll see how he does as a coach, and you know,
and then we play they play the Hurricanes and they play the entire Western Conference,
basically,
for October. Dude,
that's great. The Islanders are great against the Western Conference.
Yeah, that's true. But it just goes to like, it just is like, you know, imagine just being in Anaheim in October, like 20th, before hockey season's really started, and the Islanders come to town.
Yeah, Islanders without John Tavares.
Exactly.
I don't know how many. It's a shame because like, I don't know if this is. It would be a shame that if Matthew Barzal doesn't sell more tickets on the road, because I think people are genuinely missing out on a really unique player. But I can't, I agree with you. Like, I can't imagine a lot of people. I mean, what are they playing Anaheim on a Wednesday night in October? Nobody's going to that game. Like, that just ain't happening, you know? So, but hey, it's it. So if you want to get on a plane and go to Anaheim, I bet those tickets are going to be pretty cheap. So you can see the Islanders on the road. There you go. But yeah, they play the Predators, and then I think they play San Jose at home.
Oh, right, the matinee.
Yeah, and then they go on the West Coast swing, which, again, might not be the worst thing in the world. You know, the Trotz is all about getting together, the camaraderie, getting on the road trips and stuff. So, I don't know.
Yeah, Lucas Spezza will be cooking up some Italian dinner for him.
Oh, man.
It'll be great.
They got to get rid of this guy. They got to, because this is going to be a whole thing now.
Brian Strait. It's the new Brian Strait. It's great.
Devon Taves is going to set the record for most goals by a defenseman in the AHL to start a season. And yeah, Lucas Spezza is making lasagna for everybody in a hotel room in Anaheim. it's going to be bad. All right. A few things I just want to go over before we say, you know, adieu and, you know, look forward to the game. couple things. I forgot to plug Noel and Dan's podcast, which started last week. You should all be listening to that. They had Arthur Staple on this week. It's always good, very insightful. Dan brings up a good point all the time about how he sees two lines that are pretty good and two lines that are always chasing the puck, which is what we were talking about, which gets me, again, very scared for the coming season. Arthur Staple also did a Q&A at The Athletic today. It was all about Devon Toews. I'm not even kidding. Like, every question was about Toews. Funny. Why he's there? When's he coming back? What did he do? I mean, it's fine, but it's all about Toews, so there you go. I want to plug a Twitter account. Again, disclaimer, Twitter is the worst. People on Twitter are generally the worst. However, and I have to thank you guys because I think, Dom, you retweeted him. And Mike, I saw him through your Twitter account. I don't know who, I shouldn't say him, but this account. It's called Random Islanders Photos. And it's at Islanders Random. And if you're not following it already, you should be. It is literally what the title says. Random Islanders Photos. Just photos of Islanders in random places. Here, I'm looking at Chico Resch right here.
Yeah, it's become my happy place.
Yeah, yes, Mary Strakovsky's totally here. Ralph Macchio's here. Like, it's so, just,
there's some great ones. When I saw Ruslan Fedotenko in like a leather jacket, I just was,
yeah, oh, I don't know where they were. They were. This there's a picture here of the t-shirts they gave out during the Milstein Gluckstern era. Like what an Islanders fan is, which man, if I had that shirt still, I swear to God, I'd still be wearing it, even though it wouldn't fit me. But and what I love about the account is that there's no commentary. It's just hashtag Isles and a picture, and that's it. That's the way it should be. I don't know who runs it. I don't care who runs it. Doesn't matter who runs it. It's just hashtag Isles and then the picture, and you project onto it what you want.
Right. There's no commentary need. Every picture speaks for itself.
Absolutely.
That's fantastic way.
It's great. And it's great too, because it ends up putting me down a rabbit hole. Like the other day I saw, I was just scrolling through it just because it's like, I hope there's a new one on it. And I came back to the 2001 poster. So it's like Scatcherd and Isbister. And then I went on YouTube and I watched the last 3 seconds. There's a great YouTube video of the Islanders clinching the playoffs in 2002 or 2002 against the Capitals. And it's just 2 seconds of it's a puck drop, and then it's a celebration. And Claude Lapointe is crying because he's so happy that the Islanders made the playoffs. And it was great. So that account will send you down like a really good or bad rabbit hole.
They have the hockey news.
Yes.
Sorry, the hockey news cover with Paul Fee. Yep. And Chara, like, it is looking up like that. That, first of all, I have that. It's like, I've never framed it, but it's like in my closet for me to look at every time. And it just captures so many damn emotions and nostalgia and anger and happiness all at once.
The Chara half of that, I mean, the Palfi half, I mean, he looks kind of like Ziggy always looked, but Chara's, first of all, he's wearing number 53.
Yeah.
His hair is long. He looks like he's barely shaved in his life, and he's just enormous. Right. And he's so big that his head covers the K and the E in the hockey news headline masthead. So yeah, the whole site is great. Islanders Random at Islanders Random.
That Twitter account should be worth, you know, that person should be paid like $120,000
This is the kind of PR, like, you want to talk about off the wall Islanders PR that they should really embrace. Yeah. This is it.
Yeah, exactly. I just remember that back to that photo of like Fedotenko. It's like him and Comrie and Bill Guerin. I think Brian Burnard.
Oh yeah,
I just remember when they signed those guys, because it was Sim, Fedotenko, Guerin. They announced them all at like the same exact time,
and
they
did told Guerin he's captain.
Yes. Yeah. And they did like a photo shoot at like a mini golf course or something. Right. It was the strangest thing. So more of that.
This picture is from them at some Esquire Hockey Fights Cancer event. And so it's a really, I mean, Mike Comrie's there. Yeah, Fedotenko, Rick DiPietro with the short crew cut, Bill Guerin, and Brian Berard. So, yeah, it's great. And then right below it is Pat LaFontaine, like, I guess, a draft day with his Rick Springfield hair. It's great. I mean, it's funny thing is, like, he's only got 74. They only have 74 tweets, and all of them are gold. It's great. So kudos to you, sir or madam, whoever runs that site. Hopefully you get a lot more follows thanks to this, but you're doing a great job. Also, totally forgot to plug our friend Kerry Haber runs a website called The Cap Space, which is just at The Cap Space. articles about, you know, team structure and salary caps and all that kind of stuff. If you're into that, this is the place to go. He's got a lot of smart people writing for them. So The Cap Space, you should check it out. Kerry's good people. We know him a long time, so you should definitely follow that. And then my movie review, as I'm trying to do these things every week now, just in time for it to come out on Blu-ray, just in time for Comic-Con, Ant-Man and Wasp, it was good. I like the first one better. I think Evangeline Lilly had more to do in the first one before she was the Wasp than she did as the Wasp, but she's a good addition to the Marvel universe. Paul Rudd's always a good time. It's Marvel. It's fun. He's Ant-Man. And the little post-credit sequence is like the best they've ever done. So check it out. It's on Blu-ray. It's Ant-Man and Wasp. You probably already watched it, but if you haven't, now it's time to watch it.
I don't really see superhero movies, but I saw the preview for it. That has to be the first time I saw her in anything since Lost.
Well,
so
it's funny you mentioned that. Back. She was going to retire after Lost because it was a lot of work. She was going to retire to Hawaii. I guess she has a kid or two kids or something, and she was just about done with acting. And they went to her and were like, hey, we want you to do this. And she was like, I don't know. We'll think about it. This was the first Ant-Man. And she liked it and signed on, and now she's like she's doing stuff. So you're not crazy. Like she really did disappear between Lost and Ant-Man. But no, she's great. I just wish she my big problem with Ant-Man and Wasp is they showed you all the cool stuff in the trailer. So if you saw the trailer, as you just said, then you don't need to see the movie because you saw all the cool stuff in it. But it is a pretty good movie though. They're all pretty good. So there you go. There's my movie review.
Thank you.
No problem. Oh boy, the Caps beat the Bruins 7-0. Ouch.
Yeah, Yaro Halak got in. I think Yaro Halak's going to be pretty important for the Bruins this year.
Yeah.
You have to take any goal. Grice was horrible, but Halak, like, hit the equivalent of, like, a 94 save percentage on that defense.
Yeah. He's one of the most fascinating things that never gets talked about is how Bruins fans have been trying to run Tuukka Rask out of town for, like, 10 years now. And it's amazing to me. Like, I don't understand what you want from this guy. But it's funny to me that the backup is always the most, they used to say this about Detroit, the most popular guy is the backup goalie.
Yeah.
Now it's in Boston. Like the most popular guy is the backup goalie. And it's crazy.
Yeah. You know what? I'll take Tuukka Rask.
Yeah. I was going to say Tuukka Rask would be, if Tuukka Rask was an Islander, he'd be the greatest Islander goalie since maybe ever. Like it's not even funny, but you know. It's funny how little a trip to the Stanley Cup Finals and a couple of first place finishes will carry with certain fan bases. Boston. Anyway, that's it. I mean, did I miss anything? You guys want to have anything else to say? I mean, it's funny how we're all kind of sitting here just sort of like sighing, and the season starts tomorrow. Like nobody's really has a lot like, yeah, man, let's get at it, let's go Islanders. Like nobody's really doing that, you know? Which I'm not surprised about, but still.
Yeah, I hope they make it watchable. Like at least the first couple of weeks. Like I hope if they get out of the gates hot, like I'll be thrilled.
That's really it.
Yeah, I'll be excited if they just show any, you know, general competence. And if you see the Trotz effect happen.
Yeah. Right.
I am really interested in how he's gonna mess with the lineup as he starts to discover weaknesses.
Yeah. And, you know, one thing Staple brought up in that Q&A, as I was joking, it was mostly about Devontaeves. But, you know, we got to see how long that leash is. And, like, you know, okay, they signed Sabiza to a one-year, $1.5 million deal, which isn't chump change. But, you know, he's kind of, I guess, negligible in a way. Like, if he doesn't work out, they can get rid of him. So if that happens and, you know, you think, you know, they did extend the evaluation period a little while, then maybe that's okay. But, you know, they can't afford to drop too many games and then make it up, you know, later on because they probably won't. So we'll have to see what happens. Okay. Well, Dom, thanks for coming on. This has been great. You know, we'll get you on again this year, I promise. I always say that, but I promise.
No worries. That's right. No, thanks for having me there.
And, well, anytime. Start. This has always been great. You should follow Dom at LH Hockey. You probably are already. You should read Lighthouse Hockey every day for your update, your every daily updates of Island. I gotta really write this down because I want to make sure I get this right. I got to write the first time and I totally forgot what it was. Read Lighthouse Hockey every day for your updated Islanders news and discussion. There you go. And Dom always is at the forefront of that, and we appreciate all the work he does. I don't know how he does it all and has done it all for all this time, but thank God he does, because I don't know where we'd be without him. And then Mike, your Twitter handle as always,
The Big Lebowski with two E's.
Follow Mike at The Big Lebowski. You have to follow him. He's a must follow for Islanders fans. I don't know why you don't have more follows. You should. There you go. That's why I said it.
Thank you. I like to keep I always like to keep a low profile and be on the sly for things anyways.
Yeah, so that's about it. Thank you very much for listening. We appreciate it. Good luck this season to the Islanders. Hopefully, you know, when you're listening to this, and they've, you know, won the first game, and a lot of these worries are kind of funny to listen to, but I don't know. We'll see. Any predictions? Do we have any predictions for what the final score will be tomorrow?
I actually have a prediction for the game against the Predators, where I think Thomas Greiss is going to have one of his weird, like, 57 save shutouts.
All right, we'll take it. Well, and what, like a really low scoring game, like they win like 2-1 or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Well, then. All right. So Dom, so we have a prediction for game two. What's your prediction for game one?
I'm going with 4-2 for Carolina on a Dahan winner, of course.
There you go. That sounds about yes. Right.
Yes. All four goals by Calvin.
Right.
Yeah. Four goals by Calvin Dahan in a 4-2 victory for the Hurricanes. And I will predict Monday's matinee against San Jose will be 5-0 Sharks. I feel like the Islanders are going to be they're going to have them right where they want them. Matinee game, team on the road early in the season, and they're just going to not show up.
Yeah, especially a West Coast.
Yep.
Team too.
Yeah. Oh, and they got 4 days off after like that. 11. That's awesome. So there you go.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I meant to actually say that. We always say the schedule is weird. The Islanders play like 5 times in October. So
yeah.
At least we don't have to watch them that often.
Yeah. They play 5 times, and 2 of them are against the Sharks. 2 of them, actually, technically, they play 6 times. Twice against the Sharks, twice against the Predators, and twice against the Hurricanes. That's it. Those are the only games. Great schedule. But we will be here, which is great. We'll be here every week. So we'll see how those predictions hold up next week when we show up. And thanks for listening, and we'll see you then. Bye-bye.